From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for January the 22nd, 2017, day two into a new presidency. This is our weekly look at politics, what's happening in Chicago, Springfield, and Washington. So time to grab the Sunday paper, go get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a good start. Well, it's Sunday. The world is still here. We've got a new president, President Donald J. Trump, and now we'll see where we in the country go. We'll call our adopted hometown president now former President Barack Obama, and we'll talk about the inauguration, the transition, and all the rest coming up. But good Sunday morning, Dave and Sam. And
good morning. Good morning.
You know, it was such a glorious day outside yesterday, and you look at downtown Chicago today, and it might as well be London. It almost looks like the beginning of Creatures Features. Remember that?
I'll have to find the music bed for that.
Experiment and Terror.
Henry, yes. Mancini.
Correct.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's before your time, Sam.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
But that was always...
We got to stay up late at night on Saturday to watch that.
Yes. And all the great...
It was the first time I saw the great Universal horror classics.
That's exactly
Dracula,
right.
Frankenstein, Wolfman.
No, that was a great package of all of those classics. I mean, that was what a great way to as kids to go to sleep after watching those. You know.
I need to hear this music now, Swanee. I'm counting on you.
Okay, we'll find it. No problem.
He'll find it. That's
Creature Features?
Creature Features.
On the old Channel 9.
Oh, this predates Svengoolie by a long way.
Well,
not by much, really. A few years.
Well, not the original Svengoolie.
That's it.
Yep.
All right, everybody sing along here.
Even a man who's good at heart and says his prayers by night can become a boatman when the boatman blooms and the moon is full and bright. Maria Ostinskaya, I believe.
Ostinskaya.
Yes.
Wow, you have been following this.
It's amazing what the brain conjures up at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning, isn't it? Oh, wow. Who knew we were going to take this turn already, you know?
Although I can picture myself now, if I go back about a half an hour, this is a perfect soundtrack driving down Columbus.
Oh, sure it is. Today, yes.
No, it's a great song. I mean, it's great music. Henry Mancini. Then you get into the classical orchestral here, you know?
Brings in the strings.
Right.
In case people don't know, some folks may not know who Henry Mancini is. He did the theme for the Pink Panther, and he also wrote the soundtrack for Silver Streak, the movie with Gene Wilder.
And any number of... great
classics. And any number of TV. Oh, Peter Gunn.
Yes.
So.
There you go.
Thanks for bringing this up, Rick. This is
waiting
refreshing.
For you to transition into Trump.
You said it, I didn't.
Once again, that was Experiment in Terror, okay? So you take that for whatever you want right there.
Wasn't democracy described as the great experiment?
Yes. An always unfolding experiment. That's exactly right. Well, it's a great Sunday. I mean, we've got the weather, despite the fog. I mean, we're going to stay around the mid-40s, and that will be nice. But be careful out there if you're driving this morning, because visibilities are very low out in the west and northwest suburbs.
Downtown as well. along Columbus Drive and Lakeshore Drive can be pretty tricky out there.
Yeah, and it almost felt like the wind, I know the wind is actually out of the north today, but it almost felt like it was coming off the lake, and if that wasn't kind of helping to build in the fog a bit.
But, exactly, yeah, right. Even though the winds right now are only 3 miles an hour, they are out of the north.
Yes,
so.
And they're supposed to get stronger this afternoon.
Yes.
But all kinds of we're going to determine who's going to be in the Super Bowl this afternoon.
Yeah.
I mean, two great games this afternoon. Blackhawks, after a great 1-0 shutout in Boston, Scott Darling getting that shutout there. And the Hawks play Vancouver tonight here at home. The dad's trip is over as the Hawks are back in town. And game time is 6:30 tonight. And, of course, you can catch all the action here with John and Troy on WGN. Busy day, of course, yesterday downtown with the Women's March here in Chicago. Marches all over the country, all over the world, actually. Even marches in Paris at the Eiffel Tower and downtown. It was almost like it was the first day of spring, you know, yesterday, Dave. It was just amazing, aside from the march people, just the number of people that were out on the sidewalks.
Sure, not only the sunshine, but temperatures in the upper 50s.
Almost 60.
Almost 60, yeah.
I think it got to 59.
59,
actually.
Yes, it did.
But it was, and talk about grill weather. You know, that was
most definitely, yeah.
Yeah, it was perfect out.
Was the Pearson Grill fired up by any chance?
It had a little action on it, yes.
Excellent.
Actually have some pork tenderloins marinating because I figure that's probably a good idea for later today. But actually, I'm going to see John Cleese over at the Chicago Theater.
Oh, that's right. He's at the Chicago Theater.
Yeah, they're doing a screening of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And then John Cleese will be doing a Q&A session afterwards. And I guess who it's hosted by? The great Dean Richards.
Okay.
So it'll be a double dose of Dean for me today. How about that?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, but no, I've never seen one of the original members of Monty Python live before. So this is going to be very special, very interesting.
Be a good crowd over there for that.
And of course now and Sam, we probably have to explain what Monty Python is.
Oh, no, I know what Monty Python is, and I know who John Cleese is.
Really?
Yes.
But that's Monty Python so before your time.
Yeah, but everybody knows Monty Python. Come on, Rick.
You know what? I'm not sure everybody does. I really...
You don't think so?
I don't.
It was as popular as it was?
Yeah, but I think the millennial generation doesn't necessarily know Monty Python.
Well, yes, it could be, yeah.
That was quite a while back.
The 70s, as
the
I
originals,
recall. Monty
yes.
Python was huge when I was in college. And that goes back a ways, to admit it.
But I'm really looking forward to it. And that's just such a classic movie, too. That'll be great. And, of course, anytime you get to see anything at the Chicago Theater is always a great time.
Yes, it is.
Well, we've got Dave here to keep us up to date on all the news. Sam's got all of the sports. Producer Jasmine is here to field your phone calls. And, of course, we're at 312-981-7200. That's also our text line, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is still listening to Experiment and Terror in his headphones here as he keeps the mighty 720 up afloat here. Remember, you can always find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcasts at iTunes just by searching for me, Rick Pearson. Up ahead today, after Dave brings us the 7:30 news update, we'll be speaking to Pat Prady, of course, good friend of the show, the former director of the Illinois Republican Party, former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. And Pat will be talking about Donald Trump's inauguration and all of the inaugural festivities. Dave's back with a news update at 8, and then we'll speak to Kay Sujata. She has served as president and CEO of the Chicago Foundation for Women since 2011. And in light of yesterday's march in Chicago and elsewhere. Thought it'd be good to have her on to talk about what happens next or what should happen next as far as women and their rights. So we'll be talking to Kay Sujata about that at 8 o'clock. And then after 8:30 news update with Dave, we'll speak to David Yepsen. David's formerly the director of the Paul Simon Institute of Public Policy at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. And he was the national political writer for many years at the Des Moines Register. And David's back in Des Moines now, where he hosts Iowa Press on Iowa Public Television. And we'll talk to him more about the inauguration and the transition. That's all coming up, but first we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue, and this is your Sunday Spin. Time for our weekly spin through national politics. And, of course, what else is there to talk about but the way our political landscape has changed with the inauguration of a new president, Donald J. Trump. In a short inauguration speech, and a very simple one, Trump repeated many of the themes of his successful campaign.
For too long, a small group in our nation's capital has reaped the rewards of government while the people have borne the cost. Washington flourished, but the people did not share in its wealth. Politicians prospered, but the jobs left and the factories closed. The establishment protected itself, but not the citizens of our country. Their victories have not been your victories. Their triumphs have not been your triumphs. And while they celebrated in our nation's capital, there was little to celebrate for struggling families all across our land. That all changes, starting right here and right now. Because this moment is your moment. It belongs to you.
Now, in his inaugural address, Trump made note of what he believed was an America that had become passive, and that led to carnage in this country.
Americans want great schools for their children, safe neighborhoods for their families, and good jobs for themselves. These are just and reasonable demands of righteous people and a righteous public. But for too many of our citizens, a different reality exists. Mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities. Rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation. An education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of all knowledge. And the crime, and the gangs, and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
Now, the new president also decried the effects of globalism on America, on its businesses, the effect on the economy, and the effect on the nation's jobs.
For many decades, we've enriched foreign industry at the expense of American industry, subsidized the armies of other countries while allowing for the very sad depletion of our military. We've defended other nations' borders while refusing to defend our own. And spent trillions and trillions of dollars overseas while America's infrastructure has fallen into disrepair and decay. We've made other countries rich while the wealth, strength, and confidence of our country has dissipated over the horizon. One by one, the factories shuttered and left our shores with not even a thought about the millions and millions of American workers that were left behind. The wealth of our middle class has been ripped from their homes and then redistributed all across the world. But that is the past. And now we are looking only to the future.
That's Donald J. Trump, the 45th President of the United States, in his inaugural address. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Up ahead, we'll be speaking to Pat Brady, the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party, as we talk about the inauguration of a new president.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning and welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio on a foggy North Michigan Avenue this morning. The new president's campaign slogan was Make America Great, and in his inaugural speech, he pushed that nationalistic theme when he vowed a new era for the country, an era of America First.
From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America First. America First. Every decision on trade, on taxes, on immigration, on foreign affairs will be made to benefit American workers and American families. We must protect our borders from the ravages of other countries making our products, stealing our companies, and destroying our jobs. Protection will lead to great prosperity and strength. I will fight for you with every breath in my body, and I will never, ever let you down.
That's President Trump from his inaugural address. Joining us now on the phone is Pat Brady. Pat, the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How about you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Well, actually, I'm not sure how I'm doing. And part of the reason is yesterday afternoon, watching from the Brady briefing room, watching Sean Spicer, the new White House press secretary for the new administration, issue a basically a five-minute statement in which he made incorrect statements as he sought to chastise the media for trying to divide the country further by pointing out that the new president's inaugural speech did not draw as big a crowd as Obama's 2009 inaugural address. And he gives this, makes these false statements, spends 5 minutes doing it, and then walks out of the briefing room, doesn't even take any questions. And this was the very first statement made by the new press secretary with the new administration. And you followed, you know, that followed upon Trump going to visit the CIA and, of course, blames the dishonest media for what he said, trying to create a feud between the new president and the intelligence community, even though he's the one that likened the intelligence community to Nazis. You know, we're 48 hours into this show already, and this is what we get?
Yeah, I know Sean Spicer, and it looked like a hostage video for him.
And you make a very good point. And I've talked to Sean before, too. And that's watching that, it was obvious that this was something Trump told him to do.
Yeah, and boss was watching, better get it right. Well, I guess probably the broader point is, Rick, and we've been talking about this for 2 years, this has been going on for a long time with President now Trump. Did happen during the primary, and it just continues now. I think it's very dangerous to wage a war against the media, but short term it wins for him because the people that elected him like it. And remember when Newt Gingrich did it in the debates 4 years ago? He started going after the media, and that's when he really took off in the primary. For some reason, the group of people that elected Donald Trump like it, and I think it's a dangerous development.
And there's nothing unusual about a politician kind of using the media as a foil. That's very common, and we understand that in journalism. We know that. But to see it to this degree, and over, we're not even talking about substantive public policy here. We're talking about crowd sizes.
It was a bad first day for that. But that's again, nothing's changed since the primary. The irony of it is, I submit, it's not people like you, but CNN is probably responsible for him winning the primary because they put him on every. He got, I think they estimated $1 billion of free media because every time he talked, he put him on.
Sure, and last Thursday with Steve Cochran, I was talking about how, you know, this is kind of what you get, what CNN gets for, you know, promoting Trump, and they acknowledged that they were, that it was good ratings for him.
You know, even from the inauguration, the substance of the speech, the delivery, the whole of that, to what happened in the last 48 hours, I don't think anybody has any idea what's going to happen. But the point I would like to make is, and yeah, I think even the Pope weighed in, and I know he doesn't speak for everybody, but he said everybody, I think, needs to sit back and see what he does insofar as governing before we have protests and before every day is criticizing him. And I'm not defending him, but what I'm saying is, it gets to be white noise if every day we're saying the same things that we heard all day yesterday. Just relax for a couple weeks and see exactly what he does before you start launching on him. Otherwise, it's just, I don't think it's as effective.
Well, and I think, you know, there is a point to be made, and that, yes, we need to see what is ahead. We need to you know, yes, maybe take a chill, as it were, and see. But at the same time, here again, you know, within 48 hours, we're subjected to, you know, he's back tweeting this morning. Watched protests yesterday, but was under the impression that we just had an election. Why didn't these people vote? Celebs hurt cause badly. Wow, television ratings just out. 31 million people watched the inauguration. 11 million more than the very good ratings from 4 years ago. He cares about the ratings.
Yeah, but the thing is, again, this is what went on during the primary, and I did it all the way through thinking, okay, this can't work, but it did, and he got elected, so he just...
Yeah, but the campaign's over. The campaign is over, it's time to govern, and, you know, other than we had an executive order that basically, two executive orders, one freezing implementation of regulations, and the other kind of a precursor for... a repeal of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, but the public persona is about ratings, and you know, there was a question of whether Trump's actions yesterday was aimed at putting the attention back on him rather than these marches that occurred throughout the country.
And probably so, because that's what he did again throughout the campaign. Whenever something came up, there'd be a diversionary bomb somewhere to draw, you know, true attention away from what he didn't want attention on. But all I can say right now is I think everybody's got to take a deep breath and see what happens and let him govern. He did win the election, so we've got to give him a chance to govern. I don't like the attacks on the media, and I don't like what Jim Acosta did when I thought was a little bit disrespectful when he went after him, but the media's got to push back on him. That's one thing. And again, present company excluded, but a lot of people didn't push back on him and call him out. And I think that's what you need to do to point out to the people when you have five lies in 5 minutes.
Well, and I think that was part of the troubling factor of yesterday with Sean Spicer's appearance in the Brady briefing room, is to just deliver this statement. And, you know, there were plenty of reporters in that briefing room. I mean, everybody got summoned. I got the email, too, that this, you know, the White House is going to be making a statement. But not even.
You know, Sam Donaldson in there, Rick. You got to scream at him. Just scream at Reagan. Reagan would act like he couldn't hear him.
Yes, right. Exactly. Exactly. Cup his hand to his ear and pretend that, I can't quite hear you over there.
And they'd walk in the back door.
Exactly. Exactly. We're talking to Pat Brady, the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. We're speaking with Pat Brady, the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. I had mentioned about the new president's tweet this morning about the television ratings just out. 31 million people watched the inauguration, 11 million more than the very good ratings from 4 years ago. Just to put that 31 million people in perspective, that's nearly 7 million fewer than Obama's first inauguration 8 years ago, and 11 million fewer than 36 years ago, which was Ronald Reagan's first inauguration. So just to put things in perspective, I think it's always good to do that. We've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Good morning, Rick. Mr. Brady, we just heard a piece from when Mr. Trump was advocating protectionism. That goes contrary to one of the most fundamental principles of the Republican Party, and particularly some of the leadership, Paul Ryan, and I know yourself, you are the advocates of free markets. So I just want you to give me an assessment. Is that going to cause any tension within the party, or how do you see this playing out?
Thank you, Ron. And Pat, I was going to bring that up as well, but I thought I'd let Ron do it, because I found that his use of the word, you know, protectionism is a very kind of remarkable term to use in laying out kind of a goal of this new administration.
Yeah, and Ron makes a great point going back to Reagan and even before that the Republican Party has traditionally not been a protectionist party. We believe in open markets, global open markets, and we believe that's the best way for people to get the best products at the cheapest prices. And we've never advocated for protectionism. Now, like you said, we just heard it in the speech, we heard it in the campaign, and he got elected on that. Is it going to cause tension? Yeah, probably, because there's a conservative wing of the Republican Party in Congress, or the free trade wing, and they're not going to like that. But I think with a guy like Donald Trump, who really doesn't have a track record of consistent ideology on anything, I think he's a deal guy. And if we're going to do something on trade, it's going to be something that won't be nearly as
dramatic.
Dramatic as what he said in his inaugural. But that to me was just amped up campaign rhetoric. So we got Paul Ryan, who I think is a conservative and a deep thinker, and they're going to have to work together to get this done. But Ron makes a great point. And that was one of the issues I raised anyway during the campaign. We've never been a protectionist party. We've always been free traders. So we have a president now who doesn't believe that, but that's what got him elected.
I want to ask you, you've known Reince Priebus for years, and you know, now as the chief of staff for this president, it has to be, I mean, being chief of staff for any president is a difficult job, but it has to be especially kind of different for Priebus because, you know, with his relationship with Paul Ryan and kind of not being one of the initial insiders with Trump, it seems like kind of trying to dance in two different places.
Yeah, I think Reince is uniquely equipped for that job, and I agree with you. It's going to be difficult, but he's a very smart guy. He's a very calm guy. He's a very organized guy, and he's one of the hardest working people I've ever met. So hopefully he can be the organizational guy behind the president that can bridge those gaps. And I hear other reports that he's not necessarily the conduit to Congress, but I think he is. But if there's anybody that can do it, it's him. He's got the perfect temperament to handle President Trump, I think. And they didn't always have a great relationship early on. If you remember, Reince had to fly up there and get Trump to sign a pledge that he would vote for a Republican if he didn't win the primary. Remember that early on in the primary campaign. But they became good friends and developed a good working relationship throughout the campaign. Ryan flew around the country with him for months. And if it wasn't for the RNC, chances are Donald Trump wouldn't have won because his campaign had no ground game. And they, for the first time that I can ever recall, relied exclusively on the Republican National Committee for their get-out-the-vote effort. So I think they have a good relationship, but he's got this, I think, the perfect temperament for it.
I wanted to ask you, too, about the cabinet process, the hearing process that's going on, because we now have two members of the cabinet that have been confirmed, but still a vast number of cabinet appointees that are still in confirmation hearings. And just in some cases, it just seems questionable about how well prepared these people were, or even how well the incoming administration had vetted these people.
Yeah, I agree. It seemed that some of these folks weren't prepped before they got in there, but I don't think there's been any fatal blows so far. But I think probably the broader question is, and I watched a lot of these hearings, and sometimes I watch, I go, would you just ask the question? Don't make a statement. There's probably 10 questions you could ask.
Right, sure. And you know, it's every
process is kind of.
Sure, every member of the Senate is treating it as their, you know, their kind of their filibuster to get their camera time as well.
Yeah, I don't know how many minutes they get, 3 or 6 or whatever, but they take up 80% of the time making a statement and then ask one question. But I do think this was the buzz in Washington when I was out there this week. A lot of people are happy with a lot of these cabinet picks, not all of them, but I think the Secretary of State pick is going to turn out to be a great pick. To me, he was more of a James Baker. Just a real guy that knows the world and from the business side and just knows the world anyway. So some of the picks, I think, have been well received, but some of these folks have had problems. I do agree it's lack of prep, which to me kind of represents disorganization.
And I have to say, I mean, you know, there were obviously concerns about Rex Tillerson, the nominee for Secretary of State, coming off of the issues involving Russia hacking and his relationship with Vladimir Putin. But at the same time, there is that sense that in many cases that Tillerson is actually like the adult in the room among these picks.
I agree completely. And I saw the exchange with Senator Rubio and Rex Tillerson. And I that's exactly what I got to go. Well, this isn't the adult in the room. And he reminds me of James Baker, who I thought was one of our greatest. And the same, I've been here, I understand this, I'm not going to say things I shouldn't be saying because I don't know all the facts. I thought he was very good. And it's one thing I think we need, and I was hoping the president was going to talk more about it in his State of the Union, but we need to reset our foreign policy and our national security, I think. And I think he's a good guy to do it. We won't, no more leading from behind.
Right, but at the same point, when you mentioned the lack of kind of addressing foreign policy in his speech, and of course, you know, that was a factor in this election as well, with Hillary Clinton as a former Secretary of State, but also, you know, that kind of question about where has U.S. foreign policy gone during the tenure of Barack Obama and, you know, had America, quote, gone soft kind of thing. And other than, you know, once again, a vow to get rid of ISIS and rid the world of Islamic-based terrorism, extreme Islamist terrorism, nothing on foreign policy.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You could read the speech and watch it, and it, to me, depending on who's watching it, the people that voted for him and like that, it was a great speech. On the other side of the coin, you see the criticisms, even some conservative columnists saying it's probably the worst inauguration speech in the history of the country. Now, I don't know who's right or who's wrong, but the president stayed with what got him elected, and it was very simplistic on foreign policies. We're going to destroy ISIS. It certainly wasn't JFK or Reagan or anybody else.
But it was very dark, though. And again, kind of following the themes that got him elected, but it was just painting this very dark picture of the United States. And in fact,
yeah, carnage is not a great word to use in one of those speeches, I don't think. He said carnage in the cities or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, we played that clip where he was talking about the problems in the inner cities and referred to it as carnage.
Well, I hope he's serious about that, because where we live, we have a big problem in the city with crime and people getting shot, and we might need a federal solution to it if something doesn't happen soon. So I hope he's serious about concentrating on that. But I do agree it was dark, but again, the whole thing is so non-traditional. Who knows? Maybe we're in a different era. I don't know. A lot of people that I talk to in D.C. are worried this is going to wear thin quickly. And once we start focusing on the midterms and people see Trump at 35%, they're going to run away from him on the Republican side. But if he has a couple legislative successes right out of the box, maybe an infrastructure bill or a repeal and replace of Obamacare, this all might change and we all might be wrong again. But we just got to wait and see.
Wait and see. That is,
well, the media.
Yeah, no, and I'm not making fun of you, but I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it is such, we're in such uncharted territory here that, and you know, still to be seen what is the issue of governance and governing, and that's, you know, that's a dance that also includes the Congress.
Yeah, and there's been some great articles in the last couple of weeks and even today about the brilliance of the founding fathers setting up a system of checks and balances. So even as powerful as the president is, there's still three branches of government. But I do think that we need to give him time to govern. I've said this since Election Day. He's got to give him a chance. And then if you have criticisms on what he does, like with the way that he's handling the media, that's fair game. But to come out and start railing on him before he's even done anything, to me, is not productive.
That's Pat Brady, the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. Pat, back from Washington. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Rick. We'll see you around. Thanks.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Kay Sujata, president and CEO of the Chicago Foundation for Women. She's been in that role since 2011, and we'll be talking to her about, in the aftermath of yesterday's marches by women, maybe some things that women should turn their attention to.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson, and welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. And, of course, we've been looking back at the Friday inauguration, the inaugural address by the new president, the 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump. And it was an interesting portion in that short inaugural address that after he had spent the campaign decrying how the nation's military had been weakened, the new president said that we shouldn't be fearful as a country because we have protection from the military.
We must speak our minds openly, debate our disagreements honestly, but always pursue solidarity. When America is united, America is totally unstoppable. There should be no fear. We are protected, and we will always be protected. We will be protected by the great men and women of our military and law enforcement. And most importantly, we will be protected by God.
Now, you may remember that the new president had engaged in controversy with Congressman John Lewis, a civil rights icon. Lewis said that he didn't view Trump as a legitimate president over the Russian involvement in the U.S. political system. Trump said Lewis was all talk and no action. Well, in further attacking Washington elites, Trump also went after the politicians.
We will no longer accept politicians who are all talk and no action, constantly complaining but never doing anything about it. The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action. Do not allow anyone to tell you that it cannot be done. No challenge can match the heart and fight and spirit of America. We will not fail. Our country will thrive and prosper again. We stand at the birth of a new millennium, ready to unlock the mysteries of space, to free the Earth from the miseries of disease, and to harness the energies, industries, and technologies of tomorrow. A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions.
That's from Donald J. Trump's inaugural address. Well, joining me now here in the Showcase studio is Kay Sujata, President and CEO of the Chicago Foundation for Women. Thank you, Sujata, for joining me. And I thought it was especially appropriate in light of yesterday with the women's marches, not only here in Chicago and Washington and throughout the country, but around the world. I thought it was appropriate to have you here this morning. And because to me, it's kind of like the question is, okay, there's the march, peaceful protest, part of our heritage as a country, but also what happens tomorrow. And first, I'd just like you to, if you would, just explain what the foundation is.
Thank you, Rick, for having me on. And I'm glad to have been part of the march and seeing the amazing number of people who came out, women, men, young people, especially children and teens. It was amazing to see the turnout. The Chicago Foundation for Women has been in service to the community for over 30 years. Started at a time when less than 3% of institutional funding went to support women and girls directly. Today, that number hovers around 7%. And we're talking about the issues of supporting things like pay equity, access to high-quality, high-paying jobs, reproductive health and justice, as well as the issues of violence against women. And many of those issues, as you can see, are still relevant today. So our work continues to be relevant today. We do three things. We offer grants to nonprofit organizations that are working with women and girls. We offer training and technical assistance to those organizations to help them grow strong and and thrive. And then we also support advocacy and policy for the organizations that are working on women and girls.
And, you know, obviously from yesterday with the turnout and as some view it as a counter protest to the incoming administration, but nevertheless, these issues have been around for quite some time. How, as a foundation, and using grants, how does that affect change?
So these issues, as you say, Rick, have been around for a long time. But what is different is seeing this huge spurring of a movement, a rebuilding of a movement, which has really brought a variety of really new actors to the stage of rebuilding the women's movement and changing the women's movement, I think, for the better. And I think that spurred us to specific action around supporting organizations, supporting new people, supporting particularly young women and girls who are getting activated by this particular election and by the activism that has come out. We've never seen many of these people before who are now coming out in droves. And we really want to help support that. And so we started the 100-day fund. We launched the 100-day fund on January 3rd. And it is intended particularly to seed and grow this activism that we're seeing coming out in the community. We're asking people to do things that will sort of continue to move that activism beyond yesterday, to spur activism and to continue that activism beyond yesterday, at least to the first 100 days. We feel that if we can support and seed this growing activism initially, it will take off on its own and we'll have a huge movement that will continue to grow over time.
Because I do think it's a valid question to say, you know, what comes after yesterday? And you know, I think that's a question mark in a lot of people's minds is, you know, is this something Is it just going to be protest, or how do you turn protest into activism, into positive achievement? And it, you know, it doesn't have to necessarily be politically, mm-hmm. but you know, in practical terms, I almost wonder if the Trump election almost is a rebirth of many of these issues, because, you know, certainly these issues existed during the Obama administration, but in some sense there seemed like a complacency there that, you know, now you, with a new president, a controversial president, that maybe it was kind of a wake-up call.
It is actually a wake-up call, but more importantly, a way for us to, he talked about solidarity in the piece that you mentioned. And so this is a growth of a new solidarity. This is a growth of a new movement that really brings women and men from all different backgrounds and all different approaches to come together to talk about the issues, to really think about gender equity in a really broad sense. So it's the issues that concern all of us, issues of immigration, issues of climate change, issues of violence against women. These are things that affect all of us. And I think this new movement is really helping us bring, you know, all kinds of people really together to talk about the issues that affect all of us.
We're speaking with Kay Sujata, President and CEO of the Chicago Foundation for Women. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. And I'm joined by Kay Sujata, President and CEO of the Chicago Foundation for Women. We've been talking about, you know, what happens the day after the march. And before the break, Sujata, we were talking about, you know, just how the work that the foundation does helps spur conversation. And I'm curious because, you know, here we are in the Chicago metro area and conversation about women's issues is a pretty normal discourse. Progress, we're getting there somewhat. But what about the rest of the state? What about some of these rural places in Illinois where I'm not sure those conversations take place?
And that is a very good question, that conversations perhaps are not taking place. And one of the things that we have been concerned about is whether we're talking to ourselves too much, and how do we talk to people who are unlike ourselves, who have a different viewpoint. And I personally think that we all care about some common issues. There are some common themes that we can talk about without talking about the differences. We all care about our children. We all care about our families. We all care about good jobs. And I think that's a place for us to start a conversation. And in order to have that conversation, Chicago Foundation for Women is launching for the second year, literally a conversation starter called Talk It Out, where we are engaging women and men across the region to help spur a conversation around gender equity, around these common issues that all of us care about. Let's start there and not on the divisive issues. The divisive issues are the divisive issues. Let's talk about the things that matter to us that are common. That's where I'd like to sort of see our conversation go. And let's talk to people who we don't normally have an opportunity to have this discourse about gender equity, around the issues of what it means for families and what it means for girls in your family, what it means for your mothers and your grandmothers.
Well, and certainly there is a big economic component when it comes to issues like pay equity.
Indeed, indeed. We still continue to be paid less. So 78 cents on the dollar is the number that gets thrown about. But women of color tend to do much worse. So, for instance, African-American women make only 64 cents on the dollar, and Latinas only 54. So, and not only that, that's just one piece. We always talk about pay equity, and we talk about this difference. But for me, the bigger difference is in the assets. Women have 32 cents for every dollar that a white man has in assets. And when you think about the fact that women live longer, continue to have a lower social security, partly because of this lower pay, because of the pay gap, it really impacts women over the long terms, over their lives. And so we are concerned not only about wages, but also about assets. And these assets are much worse when it comes to communities of color.
What are some of the programs that you help fund through the foundation?
So let me talk a little bit about the programs that we fund as part of our everyday work. As I said, we fund in three areas: access to health and health information, freedom from violence, and enhancing women's economic security. So, and we fund both policy and direct services. So in terms of policy, we do fund things like not only pay equity, but access to sick leave and paid sick leave. In terms of direct services, we understand that women need to get into higher paying jobs. So we fund skills-based trainings, things like advanced manufacturing, things like the trades, so that women can get into higher paying jobs and help raise their families. In terms of violence against women, we have a deep commitment to addressing domestic violence because one in seven women is a victim of or is a survivor of domestic violence. And so we really feel that that's a place that we really can change the culture and change what women face within their families. So really a variety of areas. But with particularly with the 100 Day Fund, which is a rapid response grant making that we've started in January, we really are spurring conversations, spurring activism among women and girls around this issue of gender equity. And I'll just give you a couple of examples of what we've funded so far. One is helping girls on the South and West sides really use their voices through social media, through writing letters to their congressmen, to their elected representatives, to talk about what it means for them and what it means for their futures not to have rights to reproductive health, not to have rights to good-paying jobs, and so on. So really engaging young girls in this effort and building activists for tomorrow.
Sujata, where can people find more information on your website?
Please go to our website. You can both support the 100-Day Fund as well as donate to the 100-Day Fund. Our website is www.cfw.org.
Kay Sujata, President and CEO of the Chicago Foundation for Women, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Thank you for including me in the conversation.
We'll be back with more right after this.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, just out on the WGN Storm Center patio, and it's relatively temperate out there. Doesn't feel too bad out there. As Engineer Bob said, it's the humidity that's out there. But it actually feels pretty comfortable out there, Dave.
It's not a dry humidity.
What is a dry humidity?
No, but well, they always talk about the dry heat in Arizona and in the desert, and so that when it's very hot there, because there's no humidity, it's a dry heat as opposed to a wet.
Yes, but it's a dry heat, not dry humidity.
I'm just seeing if you're paying attention.
Okay, fine. Yes, I am listening. I am listening. Thanks a lot, Dave. Well, we've been speaking this morning, obviously, about the inauguration of a new president. And also last week we had committee hearings going on as Senate confirmation hearings. And one of the more interesting ones was Betsy DeVos of Michigan, who is the Trump nominee for education secretary. And she's come under sharp criticism from Democrats, but she had one of the more interesting answers of a cabinet nominee when a question was posed to her by Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy, and that Democratic senator has been vocal about gun control in the wake of the Sandy Hook school massacre.
Do you think that guns have any place in or around schools?
I think that's best left to locales and states to decide. If the underlying question is...
You can't say definitively today that guns shouldn't be in schools?
Well, I will refer back to Senator Enzi and the school that he was talking about in Wapiti, Wyoming. I think probably there, I would imagine that there's probably a gun in the school to protect from potential grizzlies.
Yes, the emergency gun for grizzlies. There was a lighter moment in these confirmation hearings, and that's when Trump's energy secretary nominee, who's former Texas Governor Rick Perry, when Rick Perry was being questioned by Minnesota Democratic Senator Al Franken, a former cast member of Saturday Night Live.
Senator Franken.
Governor, thank you so much for coming into my office. Did you enjoy meeting me?
I hope you were as much fun on that dais as you were on your couch.
Well.
May I rephrase that, sir?
Please. 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 Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord.
Well, I think we found our Saturday Night Live soundbite.
That's Senator Al Franken and former Texas Governor Rick Perry. Well, joining me now on the phone is our good friend of the program, always a good personal friend as well, David Yepsen, the former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, former national political reporter and columnist for the Des Moines Register. And David, back in Des Moines, he's now the host of Iowa Politics on Iowa Public Television. David, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's good to be back, Rick. I'm going to have a hard time topping Rick Perry.
Well, you know,
what he should have said was oops.
Oops, exactly. Yeah. Oops. And frankly, it was interesting that he was able to say that after favoring getting rid of the department, that now that he's going to be the cabinet secretary for, he favors keeping the Department of Energy.
Well, I do give him some credit. It's pretty rare that you hear politicians say, you know, I was wrong. I made a mistake. And it was actually kind of refreshing because we hear this rhetoric out of politicians. Oh, we're going to do away with this. We're going to do away with that. Then it never happens, and they sort of lose credibility. So it struck me as a little refreshing.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, we've been talking this morning about, obviously, the inaugural speech, as well as the first 48 hours of this new presidency. By the way, I want to point out that the president has issued a new tweet after earlier saying watched protests yesterday but was under the impression that we just had an election. Why didn't these people vote? Celebs hurt cause badly. His latest tweet is, peaceful protests are a hallmark of our democracy. Even if I don't always agree, I recognize the rights of people to express their views. I don't know what to say, because this is the Trump presidency, and no one knows. And it veers this way, it veers that way. I mean, we may need to keep Obamacare for the whiplash coverage.
You know, I was out having breakfast yesterday morning, and the couple sitting next to me who were Trump voters, one of her comments was, I just wish he'd quit this tweeting. It was a powerful tool in the campaign, but he's got to manage it better in the Oval Office. He can move markets. He can break businesses with this stuff. And you know, I'm sure he's been told to be a little more careful with those tweets. But, you know, Rick, he's talking about protests. And as I watched those protests, I thought, I was thinking back to the Vietnam War era. And it's great to have protests, and it is a great part of our history, as you've mentioned earlier today. But I think if those people want to have an impact on politics, if they want to have an impact on things, if everybody in Chicago who was at that protest in 4 years will get in their cars and drive straight north and start knocking on doors in Wisconsin, they'll have an impact. In the Vietnam War, there were a lot of demonstrations, but it started to have an impact when a bunch of college students went to New Hampshire and turned out a huge vote for Gene McCarthy. We're going to have battles for the House of Representatives and for the U.S. Senate in 2 years. And, among the things that the progressives have to do is they've got to get out to vote. Let's find another 10,000 votes in Wisconsin, go into Milwaukee and change that vote, go into Michigan and change the vote in Detroit. Let's get the black turnout better in Philadelphia. Those three states changed the election. You and I aren't having this conversation. So in terms of the focus on, well, what do we do now for the progressive movement, it's got to be getting off your duff and knocking on doors in elections and turning out your voters. Didn't do a good enough job last time. He won.
But how is that? It's complicated, though, by the fact of, what is going to be the new direction of the Democratic Party?
That's true, and they're going to have that discussion. But at the end of the day, and they're having it all over right now, there was this debate going on with among Bernie Sanders people about do they support Hillary Clinton. I think there may be people in the Democratic Party today who are having second thoughts about their unwillingness to be a little more supportive of Hillary Clinton. Millennial turnout was not what it has been in the past. African-American turnout was not what it's been in the past. So what are Democrats going to do to correct that in 2 years and in 4 years?
It's kind of like, as we talked before about, Republicans were already planning to do their second autopsy of the party and Donald Trump wins, and it's the Democrats now faced with having to do the autopsy of their party.
That's right, and one autopsy that always happens is how is our voter turnout effort? And you talk to political operatives in Wisconsin, and what everything I can hear understand is Republicans did a pretty good job with their turnout operations. So Democrats have to shape up.
We're speaking with David Yepsen. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and we're speaking with David Yepsen. David, I was curious what your take of the inaugural address by the new president. I found it to be very kind of, like a lot of people, I think, looking at it, found it kind of dark.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about that, especially for an inaugural, which you expect to be a little more uplifting. I was listening to that and thinking, well, this is a campaign speech. The campaign's over. And he now has to start working with some of these people who he vilified. And he shows some signs of doing that once in a while. He can be very gracious. He gives an inaugural speech like that, and then he turns around and goes in to have lunch and very graciously recognizes Hillary Clinton and President Clinton. So I just thought it was probably a little too dark. I like the fact it was short. He laid out his case very clearly. It's a wake-up call to Americans that there are a lot of people, a lot of his voters, who have been left behind in a lot of this prosperity. So I think that the problem was it was just a tactical thing, picking too many fights you didn't need to pick. Need a little more uplifting.
So we could go from that, and then we have this whole issue of yesterday where we have the beatdown on the press, and Sean Spicer's first real appearance in the Brady briefing room to deliver this kind of smackdown, and in doing so, not telling the truth.
Yeah, I thought Pat Brady had a good line earlier that it was a hostage video. Spicer was clearly told by the president, "You go out there and talk." About it was foolish. It was a waste of chips. The president of the United States has one real power, and that's the power to persuade, whether it's members of Congress or public opinion. And when the White House wastes its energy going out with talking about something as foolish as crowd sizes, you waste chits. And then on top of that, he was just flat out wrong.
Right.
And you can go online and you can look at the videos that are there of the malls about turnout, and it just it's clear this was a pretty lousy turnout as inaugurals go. So what? He's president. Let's move on. He ought to be worrying about what he's going to do about trade and how he's going to replace Obamacare. It was just, I don't know, let's put it down to new employee jitters, if you will. They've got to get recalibrated a bit.
Although some people suggested, too, that this was a way to turn attention back onto onto Donald Trump and the administration and away from yesterday's marches.
Well, okay, it did a little bit, but not, I mean, it didn't work because the issue became Spicer wasting time telling a falsehood, and it also didn't take away from those marches at all. It was an incredible story that occurred with those marches.
The president also made a stop at the headquarters in Langley of the CIA. And I thought, and it didn't get much coverage, but one thing that I thought was interesting was in between talking about himself and how many votes he got and how many covers of Time magazine he made, but he also talked about how the U.S. made the wrong play when it went into Iraq. And as he has said in the campaign, you know, we should have kept the oil. He told these members of the CIA, he goes, "Who knows? You may get a chance to do that."
Yeah. The problem with that appearance, I thought, was saying those kind of things in front of that wall. And that you heard some pushback from the intelligence community. That's really a sacred place for many Americans, and particularly because it represents the lives of people who have died on behalf of this country, many of whom we don't even know their names.
Correct.
And it's like you wouldn't go out to the Vietnam Memorial Wall and give a speech like that. And so he was a little out of sync with the tone of his remarks. He needs to be healing up things with the intelligence community. He knows that. He was trying to do that. But then he ambles off into this other stuff. So it's we need to stay on message, Mr. President.
So who do you think has advantage in Washington right now? Do you think it's the Republican-controlled leaders of Congress or the president?
I don't think that's clear yet, Rick. It's a good question. The president sets the agenda. He's clearly got some momentum inside the party. But now they've got to start producing some results. The question of what do you replace Obamacare with? The trade issue. It's easy to bash trade, but the first people that are going to get hurt in a trade war is going to be our blue-collar Americans. You want to start a trade war with China, all of a sudden they're not buying pork, and all those rural people in Iowa who voted for Donald Trump are going to be the first ones to be hurt by that. So Republicans are going to have a little conversation about how they go about doing some of these things, because it could backfire on them pretty quickly. And politically, Rick, I give them about a year. That's when the off-year elections occur. It's going to be a tough year for elections. You know, 2004, Republicans won. 2 years later, Democrats took the Congress back. 2008, Obama won. 2 years later, Republicans surged back. And that's the ebb and flow of American political history. There's nothing new in that. It's going to be pretty good. Should be a pretty good year for Democrats in 2 years in those congressional and Senate races. And so, the blue collar American who voted twice for Obama didn't see enough change.
doesn't have unlimited patience. They're going to want to see better paying jobs soon, and jobs with dignity soon. And if they don't, they'll drop Trump just as they've dropped other presidents.
That's David Yepsen. He's the former director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU, now the new host of Iowa Politics on Iowa Public Television. David, congratulations on the new job. And as always, I hope you'll join us again in the future.
Great to be with you, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Pat Brady, Kay Sujata, and David Yepsen. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening on this inaugural presidential weekend.
Was that this weekend? You know, I've been in the basement doing a lot of cleanup. Did I miss anything the last couple of days? Anything happen?
Glad to have you here in studio. And yes.
Anything happen over the last couple of days I should know about before I start a radio show?
Well, I know you weren't listening to the opening of the show when I was referring to the fog and said it kind of looked like Creature Features this morning.
Boom, boom.
Now, what's the name of the song?
Boom, boom. Does that have a name?
Experiment in Terror, which boom, people suggested boom, might cover the weekend here.
Boom, boom.
Yes.
Boom.
Yes.
Oh, that was the scariest. Remember that picture of that? That ghoul with his hand up?
Yes.
Was that supposed to be, I think that was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
But
Creature Feature.
Yes.
Oh.
Henry Mancini's experiment.
Oh, that was Henry Mancini?
Yes.
Oh.
See what you could learn by...
I got to get out of that basement.
We're just more than politics here.
Obviously. You're wearing your Blackhawks hat. You're in for it all.
I could use another shutout today.
Oh, man. Scott Darling.
Wasn't that great?
I'll tell you. There's nothing better than having a goalie, drama
yes,
on a team. Two
yes.
good goalies.
And there's nothing better than an original six shutout.
Yeah, no kidding.
Against Boston.
And 1-0.
Yes,
I mean,
fantastic.
That's a tight game. Blackhawks are an interesting team this year.
Never a dull moment.
Yeah. I mean, first place, second place, but it's going to be an interesting season till the end.
And the playoffs.
That's what
that.
I'm saying. Yeah,
yes. Indeed. Well, have a great show.
Thank
this
you. I will. I just found out it. I thought it went till 1:00, but I guess it goes to 11:30. So
there you go.
I can do
it's
that.
It's a breeze.
Standing on my head.
You can do it from the basement.
And many people say it. That's exactly what it sounds like. Thank you, Rick.